And the lovely voice of Peter Credlin, leading the Canberra Choristers, introduces the Little Wireless program. Like our Prime Minister, the Buena Vista Social Club is facing its final curtain, and they're about to circumnavigate the globe, touching in Australia, to bid us a fond farewell, and we'll meet up with them a little later in the program. We're also going to peek through the bamboo curtain again at North Korea. We like to approach the North Korean topic from various angles. And one of my guests would like to remind us that people still have fun in North Korea. They fall in and out of love. They get drunk. They do drugs. They squabble over money and, oddly enough, over education. But on this case, we're going to look at, as it is now, and the horror story of the Great Korean Famine. Talking about feasts and famines, we've got, of course, a considerable problem with country of origin food labelling. Up to 19 Australians have contracted Hep A from consuming berries processed in China. But there are other matters. Oh, incidentally, I understand that Prime Minister Abbott is fast-tracking a submission for Cabinet on the issue of food labelling, if he's not being too distracted. Other matters arising from this food scare, and to discuss them, I'm joined by Mick Keogh. Mick is Exec Director of the Australian Farm Institute, which is an independent institute researching policy issues that affect Australian agriculture. Welcome, Mick, to Gunnanell.
Thank you.
$12 million worth of food production annually we import.
$12 billion.
$12 billion. Yes, that's what I meant to say. And so, you know, what we're talking about is obviously a fairly rare occurrence. How concerned should we be?
Look, generally speaking, there's reasonable systems of food safety associated with the quarantine and biosecurity systems in Australia. That doesn't mean they're perfect, and I guess they can never be perfect. And I guess one of the things that concerns a lot of farmers in Australia is that the standards that are applied here aren't necessarily the same as the standards that are applied elsewhere. And we see that in questions about the standards of products that are coming here, particularly in relation to food safety.
Mick, for the moment, consumers will be very patriotic as they go up and down the aisles of Woolies and Coles and Aldi Pet L, but I guess that won't last long, that flush of patriotism.
No, I think, and that's one of the real challenges for the agriculture sector in Australia, and that is to be able to explain to consumers, you know, if you have got a green map of Australia or a yellow map of Australia on something, what actually that means. What are the production and quality characteristics of that product that mean it's different to product that's imported from another location? Unless we, you know, we tend to take this view that, look, we'll just stick a kangaroo or an Australian map on it, and consumers will intrinsically be more patriotic and stump up for that product in preference to imported product. But we know that's actually not the case, even though in our heart of hearts we think that's what we do. Our behaviour belies that all the time. So unless we, and I guess from your marketing background you'd be familiar with these concepts as well, but unless we convince consumers about the values and the characteristics of products carrying that label and why they are different, you know, I think it's only a fairly short-term mine of patriotism that's available, and the next time there's a cheap product on the shelf, that will get the dollars, unfortunately.
I suddenly recall being involved in a Buy Australian campaign years ago and being yelled at by the incumbent Prime Minister Malcolm Fraser, yelling, top of his voice, tell them that the Ford and the Holden is better than the Mercedes and the BMW. And I said, you tell them, Malcolm. Because they certainly weren't taking that too seriously. Why is there such strong resistance from governments, food processors, retailers, to the this type of information being made available, nation of origin stuff on labels?
Oh, I think it's pretty obvious. There is two or three reasons. One is, whilst our major retailers and food processors like to express patriotism, they know they're in a pretty competitive environment, and if they don't import cheaper stuff, someone else will. So they tend to do things like, say, put a label on it that says, you know, made in Australia from Australian imported products, which covers a pile of different arrangements. And the other thing they tend to do is put very big badges of, you know, proudly Australian-owned company. And you have to look really, really hard to find where the actual product inside that package came from.
So you're on an organisation which calls itself the Australian Broadcasting Commission or Corporation, I never remember. In fact, we are a wholly owned Chinese venture, but people fall for it, Mick. They do.
They absolutely do. And again, your marketing background would make you very wise to those sorts of things. I think that's where the real challenge lies, because there is an intrinsic value in the Australian brand. We know that because so many try and use some of it to their own advantage, even when it's a bit misleading.
I agree with you on most of your propositions. We're now going to move into difficult territory where I emphatically disagree with you, and that involves your arguments that the big supermarkets banning specific farm practices by their Australian suppliers are in error.
Well, we might have to disagree on this, but you know, I have no problems at all with appropriate labelling and allowing consumers to make choices.
Now, but what I'm talking about is that Coles have banned the use of hormonal growth promoters in cattle and sow stalls for pig producers, sort of stuff.
Yeah. And the difficulty is that those same retailers at the same time import pork products where it's fairly questionable what the standards are applied. Now, Coles will say that they check every supplier in Canada and Denmark and all the other places in Eastern Europe that those pork products originate, and they don't use those production practices. But I think there's a few people would argue with that based on what they've observed and what they've seen. So the dilemma is, and we've seen this in the UK, the classic case of the UK that's gone from a largely self-sufficient food producer 30 or 40 years ago to one now that's approaching 50% imported food consumption. And what happened, and you can understand why, on the back of the foot and mouth disease and a few of those sorts of things, they introduced some very strict rules around the type of production allowed in farming, particularly around intensive livestock. And what they simply did then was start importing whole as bolus from Eastern Europe where those same standards didn't apply. So the point of that whole regulation and that whole move to ban some of those practices really didn't achieve a net benefit in that respect, and in fact disadvantaged the local producers.
Tell us about Brand Australia as opposed to Team Australia, Mick. Tell us about the subject of a recent edition of your Institute's Farm Policy Journal.
Well, it's an interesting issue because, as I said, you know, we tend to reflectively say, well, just stick an Australian label on it and that'll do it. And there is some attraction to that by consumers, and particularly in places like China. But unless we go to the trouble of explaining what it is about the production characteristics of Australian food, there's only a very shallow puddle to mine, I think, and once that's gone, you're nowhere. So we have very natural, and I know we'll argue about HGPs, but we do have very natural production systems. We don't have the massive industrialised systems that are quite common in the UK, quite common in Europe, and in fact quite common in a lot of the industrialised world. We have pasture-fed ruminants that graze on pasture for pretty much all their life. We use absolutely minimal fertiliser and pesticides compared to most of the countries we compete against.
You're talking the right stuff, Mick. This is what I like to hear.
There is a very good story there, but we don't talk about it. We simply say, well, put an Australian flag on it and that'll be right. We'll get on with the business. So, you know, the Kiwis, on the other hand, despite some quite terrible problems in relation to nutrient runoff into rivers and rivers that you can't swim in and all that sort of stuff, have their 100% pure brand, and they all march proudly behind it and sing it very loudly in their tourism, in their agriculture, in everything they do. And they gain quite incredible kudos as being the source of very safe and very pure and very natural food, even though...
They've had some troubles lately, haven't they, with
their
milk?
They've had some troubles lately, and, you know, on any of the indicators that you can look at, things like fertiliser use per hectare or anything like that, they use enormous amounts of inputs that that aren't even used in Australia. So their claim to naturalness and purity don't stack up compared to Australia, and yet they are much better at selling that.
Mick, thanks for your time. Mick Keogh, Executive Director of the Australian Farm Institute. And this is a little wireless program called Lennon L. And we're off to North Korea with Daniel Tudor and James Pearson.